it all hang out.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Glad to be back and glad to have my guest here this morning, as we often have him on, usually about once a month. He's a contributor to Forbes.com. He writes about music. He does interviews. He joins us usually once a month, and we welcome Jim Ryan back to the show. Jim, how are you, man?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. So, welcome back. You've been busy.
Thank you. Yeah, as always.
Yeah. Lots of concerts and lots of music. and
some good, some bad.
Some good, some bad. Uh-huh. And that was Brick House.
Yeah.
That we just heard. with the Commodores.
I know you love Lionel.
I love that song.
Okay.
I do. I mean, that song rules. Not a big solo Lionel Richie guy. But he's 70. He turned 70.
Turns 70, I think, tomorrow?
Okay.
I think. The 20th? Is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow is... No, today? Well, today
what's
is today? The 19th.
Today is whatever. Okay.
Yeah, tomorrow would be Thursday, the 20th.
Yeah, he turns 70 on the 20th and celebrated a little bit early on stage at Ravinia because... Isn't that just the most appropriate place to celebrate a 70th birthday, Nick?
Sure, Ravinia. Sure, man. Did you interview him?
I did not. I just went to review the show.
Okay. Well, and
fantastic if you're a Lionel fan. Probably not so much if you're not.
Well, that makes sense.
He did some Commodores.
Did he?
So you would have been okay.
Did he do Brick House?
He did Brick House.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he did. He opened with Easy.
Oh, that's a great song.
It's a jam.
I love that song. And also, I love the Faith No More version of it.
The Faith No More version, like all of their covers... stay surprisingly true to the originals, and they're never bad. It always amazes me.
No, that's the thing about. I mean, you expect Faith No More to do a cover of Easy, and it's going to be
right.
insane. And it's not. It's very faithful and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
I think it's one of my favorite covers, actually. Uh-huh. But see, so how was the crowd? Was it a big crowd?
Yeah, it was. He did two nights.
Two nights.
This was the first of two nights, and it was packed because I did take a walk through the lawn section and. They had a nice crowd up there in Highland Park.
Yeah.
The wine and cheese crowd was enjoying themselves some dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
As only they can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't been to Ravinia in years. I'm trying to remember the last time. I was seeing Cheap Trick, I think, was the last time.
Wow, okay.
That I was there. And but I remember I went to... I saw, for some reason, and I don't know why, I was dating this girl. This is like 26 years ago. And... I don't know why, but we got the wine and the whole
sure,
thing and
that's
everything.
What you do there.
And then you sit on the blanket, and it was Gordon Lightfoot. And I'm not really sure how I ended up at a Gordon Lightfoot concert at Ravinia.
Did he do The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Of course he did, yeah.
How long was the performance of it?
Of that song?
Yeah.
I don't know. Eight, 20 minutes?
Okay.
20 minutes, yeah.
Felt like 40? Okay.
But it was a long time ago. It was like summer of 91
wow.
when we went to this thing. And I'm not really, I don't know how I got roped into it.
I was going
to
say, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I've seen some shows. They still book stuff like that. Last summer, I think it was last summer, maybe two summers ago, very recently, I saw Toto and Michael McDonald, which is like the most Ravinia concert ever.
That's fantastic.
It was awesome.
That is fantastic. Toto and Michael McDonald.
And yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't reviewing. I had, we bought lawn tickets, and I think everybody, we just got looks all night long because We started out with some coffee at Billy Corgan's tea shop down the street, which is no longer there, unfortunately,
right. Yeah,
but it was there then. Had some coffee, hit a liquor store, grabbed a case of Coors Light, because you can bring, obviously at Ravinia, you can bring whatever you want into the lawn section,
right.
Even if it's just an unopened 24-pack of Miller Light or Coors Light or whatever that's not in a case or a cooler. And we did that, and we got a pizza. My buddy walked in with the pizza, and I walked in with the 24-pack about 5 minutes before it was supposed to start. And we stood at the edge of the lawn with the stuff right in the middle of the walkway, and people were not. They didn't find it as funny as we did.
No.
And then proceeded to laugh all the way through Toto. And they didn't appreciate that either, believe it or not.
They didn't appreciate you laughing through Toto?
Through the whole set.
Who did Michael McDonald open?
Michael McDonald was last.
Oh, he was a headliner.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A powerhouse headlining performance it was.
Wow. Did he have the beard?
He did.
Yeah.
They had the full beard, the Motown covers.
I think he shaved the beard.
Has he really?
I think he did.
I don't know. That's...
I saw him at the Rock and Soul Review.
Oh, with Hall & Oates.
No. It wasn't Hall & Oates. This was like in the 93.
Okay.
And it was at Poplar.
Okay.
No, not Poplar. World. It was at the World.
Wow. Michael McDonald could fill the world.
And, well, it was a whole review.
The 90s were really something.
And it was a whole, like, different acts would come out, do a couple songs, come back, and then they would play together. And that was the concert that I went to where, Fagan and Steely Dan reunited.
Did they do the Aegis stuff with him?
Yeah. Well, they did. Yeah, they did. Listen, let me explain something to you. That was one of the greatest concerts I've ever. I mean, the show itself, but that moment when Steely Dan came out, I'm not exaggerating. There were grown men crying.
People love Steely Dan.
They played Deacon Blues. I swear to God, people were weeping like grown men. Tears were falling out of their eyes. We were drowning Tinley Park in our tears.
So wait, had this happened on each night of the tour, or was this like a shocking thing that happened in Tinley Park?
I think it happened every night.
Okay.
But the thing is, they very, very rarely toured. There was Steely Dan was mostly just a studio band at that time.
Right.
So it was a very rare occurrence to have those two guys on stage together. And I'm telling you, when they did Deacon Blues, it was just transformative. And I'm not exaggerating. Like a 6.5 minute ovation.
Wow.
Like a standing ovation.
Not
like,
only that, people love them. I know that.
Oh, man. But that's where I saw Michael McDonald.
So did they do Peg?
Yeah.
Yes.
They did. They did Peg. Sure. And they did. Well, they did all the. I mean, they opened with Deacon Blues. And that was it, though. I mean, wow. I was done. They could have left.
Okay.
The show could have been over at that point. And I would be like, this is the greatest show I've ever seen in my life.
Steely Dan's got a couple jams.
Oh, I love Steely Dan.
I was going to say, that would have been all right.
I'm a big Steely Dan fan.
I'm not going to. Any shade.
They're a very divisive group, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because I don't. There's nobody. Nobody I know thinks they're okay.
Oh, it's either it's one.
It's love
or
hate.
Other.
It's love
so
or
like
hate.
Rush.
And I am. Yeah, like like Rush. But no, I'm a big. I mean, I am a Dan.
Okay.
I am a fan of the Dan. There's no. I mean, I love them unapologetically.
Who else was on this bill? Now, I'm so fascinated.
Boz Scaggs.
Okay.
Oh man,
of course Buzz Scaggs was on that bill.
Buzz Scaggs, yeah.
Did he just do the Lido Shuffle and that was it?
No, he did like two or three songs.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Was it Patti LaBelle?
Wow. This is really an interesting.
It was
again,
weird.
In the 90s.
It was the Rock and Soul Review is what it was called. And I got the tickets for free. And the reason my friend and I went was because the Dan was going to be there.
Sure.
And that's the main reason why we went. It wasn't like Buzz Scaggs was the big draw for me. Yeah, so but no, that was when I saw that's when I saw Michael McDonald.
Wow.
So but yeah, Lionel Richie, 70.
He's 70 and celebrated that on stage with members of his 1967 Joliet East graduating high school class. I didn't even know he went
East. Seriously?
The last 2 years he graduated from there and played tennis.
I had no idea.
Nor had I until he brought it up on stage.
I had no idea that there was any kind of connection.
Yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
Did he say outrageous?
He said outrageous. But the thing he did more than that was complain about the bugs that was driving him crazy.
Oh.
He kept going off on these long rants about bugs on stage, and he was really losing it. Somebody handed him from the front row a can of Deep Woods Off, and he about lost his mind. I believe the quote was, I've been a lot of sexy places in my life, and never did I need Deep Woods.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know,
he had fun with it. It was good.
Yeah. All right. Well,
and
cool.
They closed with We Are the World, by the way.
They did?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So that happened.
There you go. All right. Lionel at Ravinia. And the review is up. And you can read it. That's at Forbes, right?
It is. Luckily, the servers are handling the traffic.
Okay. Lionel Richie lights up the internet,
man.
Yeah. All right. Jim, hang out, okay?
Okay.
Jim Ryan is with us, contributor to Forbes.com. He writes about music and all kinds of cool stuff, and we have him in usually once a month just to chat, and that's what we're doing right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and the news is up right after this. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around, to rock around. That's right. On time is tricky. It's tricky, 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 tricky. It's tricky to rock around, to rock around. That's right. On time is tricky. Tricky, tricky, tricky. I met this little girlie. Her hair was kind of curly. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. We are going to have, we're going to play a round of Music IQ with Jim and with Tom. And then we're also going to play a round with you guys of Know Your Onion, where you have to guess whether or not Tom is giving you a real news headline or an onion headline. And because the news is so weird now, sometimes it's hard to tell. Jim Ryan is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Contributed to Forbes.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at Radio Jim Ryan. That's at Radio Jim Ryan. Joins us to talk about a lot of things. Well, we just heard a little Run DMC, and you talked to Daryl McDaniels.
He is the nicest guy ever.
Yeah.
I love that guy. Oh, my God. So the... pardon me. This was a while back at C2E2.
Okay.
He started his own comic book imprint, so he was there promoting that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were several musicians there that weekend who throw their name on a comic or lend their likeness to a character, but he's taken it way, way further. He's actually launched a publishing company to make DMC comic books.
Oh, okay.
So he was there promoting that, and it was, I mean... We talked at length about his love of comic books, and when I posted the interview last week at Forbes, I took all of my questions out and just condensed his answers together into one thing, because it basically is just a love letter from him to comic books.
Yeah.
The highlight of that chat, by the way, being when I naively asked him what was his favorite comic character growing up. Because when I tell you, you're going to laugh, but do you know where it's going?
No.
Peter Parker. And do you know why?
No.
Peter Parker is from Queens.
Oh, sure.
He's like, when I found out Spider-Man was from Queens, that made it real. He's like, what do we say in every album? King's from Queens.
Right.
And here Spider-Man is from Queens.
Wow.
So he went on and on about his favorite comic characters and was extremely knowledgeable and extremely passionate on the subject. So he was fantastic.
Yeah. And do you have a big turnout?
He actually had a table on the convention floor. He wasn't like one of these guys who had the table
the
in the back
room,
where you've got to pay. And,
yeah.
And, you know, he just was out there for anyone who wanted to walk up to him could walk up and get a picture or talk about comics or talk about music or whatever. He was sitting there in an AC/DC t-shirt. I mean, it was everything you want Daryl McDaniels to be at a comic book convention. He was the best.
That's pretty cool.
And he talked to my girlfriend, too, about it, that... His comics, just like his music, are, you know, he said he feels very out of place in the current rap world because of, you know, his songs by and large have a real positive message and all of that stuff.
Right.
And he says it's the same way in the comic books. So they had actually talked, because he's had schools come to him where they kind of integrate it a little bit into the curriculum, or they have them on site for kids to read since it's appropriate for that age level.
And how many titles does he have?
I'm not sure. He's got a bunch, though. This he launched in 2014, so it's been going on for 5 years, and he's still launching new ones. I just looked at his Facebook page the other day, and he's still making the rounds, hitting the Comic Cons and all of that stuff. So
what are some of the characters
going well? I haven't gone through it too much. He's the main character, though.
Okay,
so that's pretty awesome. And I mean, the cover of the comic book is you would recognize it immediately from Run DMC album cover work. They use, you know, the same Run DMC logo and everything.
Yeah.
For it. It's DMC is the name of it. So it's pretty great. He was awesome.
How many does he have, a staff and of authors?
That's my understanding. He works with Riggs Morales is his partner in this venture, who was Eminem's right hand man starting Shady Records.
Oh, okay.
So I guess the two of them had wound up in a meeting, I think at RCA, he said, and wound up talking about comic books, and he's like, the next thing I knew, we had been sitting there for 3 hours, and we had kind of basically hashed out this idea to launch a comic book company.
Wow.
So not just lending the likeness, he's taking it way, way further. So it's cool.
And what about music for him?
His son, he just put out he's on his son single. D-Son, I think, is his son's name, D-S-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And he is on that single. I haven't heard it yet. So it's DMC, his son, D-Son, and then Bumblefoot from the later Guns N' Roses era, where Axl had all hired hands.
Oh, right.
Bumblefoot was one of the guys in there. He plays guitar on it. So my understanding is it skews close to what you would expect from Run DMC, which is a bit of a rock element in there as well. So that, and then I think he's done some stuff with Run. They haven't like done a tour and stuff, but they've at least, I think, are getting along enough to do like one-off things here and there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Daryl McDaniels. There you go.
I love Run DMC.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, they're great. They're great. And there you go. It's an own comic book publishing house.
Have you ever seen them, out of curiosity?
Yes.
Okay.
Geez, when? Early 90s?
Okay.
I want to say.
Do you know where it was?
Riv.
Wow, that's Run DMC at the Riv. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was great, too.
I bet.
Yeah.
I saw them in 01 at Allstate Arena on an FM radio lineup, and they were the first band on. They had just put out that new album. I think now their last album.
Yeah.
Crown Royal, I think maybe it was called. Does that sound right?
I think that's right.
And they were touring for that. In,
but this was like a, but this was like an FM radio. Like
one of those.
A ton of acts.
They were the first one on, and it was a stacked bill. Moby was on that bill. Foo Fighters, Bush.
Wow.
Oasis, Fiona Apple. But Run DMC.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty good.
That's a crazy lineup, man.
That
did Oasis show up?
So Oasis, that's one of my all-time favorite concert stories, actually, is not only did they show up, but they had to be pressed into action early. And I've thought to myself for almost 20 years what it had to be like to be that radio station staffer who was tasked with going backstage and asking those two idiots to go on early. We need you to... are you ready now? Could you go out there now? Fiona Apple was on before them. And had a breakdown and ran off stage, and
of course she did.
It was a whole thing, and I don't remember if it was Liam or if it was Noel who took the mic when they came out there to start early, but they had a colorful tirade.
I'm sure they did.
Directed
at
toward Fiona.
Believe at that time was dating Paul Thomas Anderson, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
because they were dating when he dedicated Magnolia to her.
Okay,
and his dad. But yeah, they dated for a while, Fiona Apple. And Paul Thomas Anderson before he started dating Maya Rudolph.
Okay.
But yeah, they were together for a while. And
Is he dating Maya Rudolph?
They're not married. They've got kids.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they live together. They've got a bunch of kids. She was pregnant for like 5 years straight.
Okay.
Do you remember the period of time?
Yeah, no, like,
there was a period of time when Maya Rudolph was like pregnant all the time. And and then she even did that movie, Away We Go, and she's very pregnant in that. And it was just a period of time where it was like, boy, she's...
How did I not know that? Wow.
Yeah.
ETA.
They're together. Yeah, very cool.
But, Liam and Noel had a word or two for Fiona.
Wow. Yeah, leave her alone.
I think you can say some of them on the radio, but not most of them.
Not most of the words.
Yeah.
No. And I'm not surprised at all.
No.
at all. Other stuff that you've been writing about, you were at the Siskel Film Center.
That was amazing.
With Favreau and Robert Downey Jr.
I mean, how often do you get to be in the presence of somebody like that? I mean, I love John Favreau, but I love Robert Downey Jr. too. I mean, he's such a unique, he's an eccentric person, but a passionate guy too.
I just love how he turned himself around.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
It is.
A great success story. You know, guy was on drugs. He was in jail.
Yeah.
Suicidal.
Right.
Sleeping in other kids, people's bedrooms and stuff.
Right.
And now he is like the king of the world.
He, I mean, he got into it a little bit on stage. He called himself, and I quote, a little bit of a fixer upper.
Well, you know, it's cool that it was Favreau and Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
Because Favreau's kind of responsible for bringing him back. Nobody wanted to work with him.
The insurance companies didn't even want to put him on a set, I believe was. The studios didn't want to work with him because they couldn't get the films insured, wasn't it? I believe the case.
He was in bad shape. I mean, nobody wanted to hire him. The thing about it is that, you know, like 2008 was a big year for him.
Okay.
Because that was the year that Iron Man came out. It's also the year that Tropic Thunder came out.
Wow, okay.
And he got nominated for an Academy Award for Tropic Thunder. So it was a big year for him. I like to go back about a year and a half and think that Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was the first.
Oh, okay. Okay, sure.
That was the first sort of like comeback for him, because I love that movie. So what was the whole thing about?
Well, so he got into this too, because I didn't know this. His wife is who helped him turn it around. He was afraid he was going to lose her, and he turned they together turned it around. She's from Schaumburg. And they're both on the board of the Gene Siskel Film Center.
Mm.
So the Siskel Film Center, it's their big fundraising event each year is this gala that they put on where they honor one recipient of their Renaissance Award. So in 2009, Jon Favreau was there to and then whoever's presenting the award interviews the recipient. So in 2009, Favreau was there to interview George Lucas, who was the recipient.
Right.
In 2010, Downey Jr. won it. And then he's joined the board. So the two of them have kind of a relationship with the Siskel Film Center, but they were there this year because Favreau was the recipient of the Renaissance Award.
Oh, okay.
And so Downey Jr. was presenting it to him, and then it was the two of them on conversation on stage
that
for
must have been
about
fun.
2 hours.
That must have been a lot of
it
fun.
It was pretty great. I mean, because Favreau got into the fact, I didn't realize that he kind of got his start here doing a lot of improv. I don't know how I missed
that. I've been on stage with him.
Okay.
Yeah. This goes way back. This is like... 88, 89.
He just gushed about that experience.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, he was also in a production of with a friend of mine. He was in production of 12 Angry Men.
Okay,
and he just played the guard who would come in every once in a while. He's got like five lines to come in every once in a while,
right?
But that's how far back you know the connection with him doing improv and on stage here in Chicago. Because I remember when, you know, because I knew him, and I remember when Swingers broke, it was a big deal.
Right.
It was like, whoa, one of our mm-hmm. own, you know, just wrote this script, and
right.
He's in it.
Right.
And, you know, this was before anybody knew who Vince Vaughn was or any of that stuff. But right. I remember vividly when Swingers broke. It was a big deal for a lot of us who knew him. But yeah, so it's great to see how successful, unbelievably successful this guy is.
Yeah, that's because I mean we were talking about that too. I mean, you know, Swingers and all of that stuff for a long time is stuff I enjoyed, but to think now that he's done, you know, some of these just immense movies.
Oh, and he's
Iron
got the
Man,
Lion King.
He's got the Lion King coming out, which is
out.
I mean that's like that's king making, right?
He did
fantastic. He did the Jungle Book too, right?
The Jungle Book was great. He
so,
did
I mean,
a great job with the Jungle Book. And yeah, I remember, you know, when he first started directing, I didn't know, you know, what road he was going to take, you know, because, but I mean, he's in the new Spider-Man movie too.
That's amazing. And Elf and all these different things that he's done. I mean,
oh, Elf, yeah.
It's kind of amazing. But I mean, he talked about that, that he had these dreams and he, you know, where he was living, he didn't think they were possible. And he came here and he went to an improv Olympic show and he went to a Second City show and all of a sudden he realized that this was a city where you could actually, you know, get a job as a bartender or something and afford to live and to do all this stuff
right.
And to figure out how to be good at it. And I think the comment he made that I just loved was that Chicago gave him the opportunity to fail, that we don't let people fail anymore. It's impossible to fail, but that's how you learn. And he thanked Chicago for allowing him to fail and stand back up.
I will say this, you know, I've been in the theater community here for a very long time. I haven't done theater in a while, but I've said this so many times. This is the best city in the country to ply your trade as an actor.
Sure,
because you can work. There are hundreds of theater companies in this city, from small storefront to bigger ones. And you can learn as you go, and it is a great place. I mean, the best place to learn, you know, to learn how to act, to do improvisation, all that stuff. and the results are pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, all right, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Jim Ryan is with us. We got more to talk about here, and you can follow him on Twitter @RadioJimRyan, and he writes for Forbes.com. And we got much more to talk about with him, and we are going to play a round of Music IQ. To test us out. And that's all coming up right after we take a break. You gave me something I understand. You gave me love in my palm of my hand. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's actually one of my favorite Paul McCartney songs of all time, Tom.
It's so good.
Oh, it's such a great song. And I directed this play called Top Shelf years ago. And we did a dance number to that song. It took place in a strip club. The play took place in a strip club, but it was like the romantic scene of the main character and the female dancing to that song.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I love that. Let me roll it. That's a great song.
He did that last week.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. By the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Jim Ryan is with us. And you went to see Paul McCartney.
I did.
In Fort Wayne.
We've talked about him a couple times now, and I remain amazed every time I walk out of that concert, because he's another one where you're like, I hadn't seen him in a while, been several years.
Yeah.
And I think he turned 77 yesterday, right? I think his birthday was yesterday.
Right around, yeah.
And it's one of those ones where he goes, this is going to be the time I walk out of there going, oh, it's starting to go. It wasn't. He was fantastic.
I haven't seen McCartney. It's been a long time. I've seen him a few times, but great every time.
Yeah.
Every single time. And plays a long set, too.
It was almost 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours.
You get your money's worth when you go see Paul McCartney.
Yeah, you do.
So this was in Fort Wayne. Tell me a little
bit
about
it. Fort Wayne, yeah. This is an interesting tour he's on, because he's doing a lot of these smaller markets. I get the impression that maybe more so than any of his contemporaries, or those guys that are still doing it from the British invasion, that he really gets a kick out of it more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And makes a concerted effort to take that tour and put it in front of people who haven't had the chance to see it. So Fort Wayne, Indiana, for instance, he was at Moline a couple of days later. He went up to Green Bay. He did Madison. So it's he did Louisville. He did South Carolina. It's been all smaller towns off the beaten
track. And this is a guy that doesn't need to be doing this.
Doesn't have to do that, right?
No.
$27 to get in the door.
Wow.
Now, he makes up for that on the other end. You know, the people who are sitting up front are paying. But, I mean, he makes it a point to, if anyone who wants to come see Paul McCartney can, and they can afford it.
Yeah.
So it's like, God bless him, because he could be charging a hell of a lot more than $27 to get in the door.
Absolutely. What was the set consisted of?
So, I mean, he opened with, what did he do here? As I'm looking totally at the wrong set list. But he opened, I think, with A Hard Day's Night and went straight then into Wings. And one of the things that really struck me about that concert was that he has so many hits that... So he did 39 songs, right? Which is insane. And at the end of a three-hour concert that features 39 songs, it's just as notable what he didn't play as what he did. Because I don't think he did anything off... See, I'm going to get caught now, but I want to say maybe one song off Rubber Soul.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did Got to Get You Into My Life. Is that off Rubber Soul?
Yeah.
I think. I don't think anything off Revolver or Eleanor Rigby.
Okay.
So I think one off each, I think. I'd have to double check that.
Yeah.
But those are two albums where he could have played every song would have known them. I mean, and then so it's like we're in the car driving back and you start going through what he didn't play, and it's almost as impressive as what he did, because it's just you could have built another 39 song set.
No question.
with all these
No,
hits.
It's incredible.
Ridiculous.
It's incredible the amount of great songs that he's written.
Right.
I mean, it's insane.
So I think it falls. I mean, his band is amazing. Same five-piece band.
Those guys,
they're great.
They're unbelievable.
And it's amazing now, because so he was a member of the Beatles for what, 10 years?
10 years, yeah.
7 years they were toured, maybe, I think,
yeah,
at the most. Wings, I think, was 10 years. He's been with this band 20 years. So to say that they're pretty tight. He's got, I think, a camaraderie with this group of performers that he hasn't had necessarily with another backing band.
The band that he has now is incredible.
Yeah.
They have been for a long. I mean, you said they're
20 years. I think it's about 20 years.
Yeah, I remember when he was on SNL.
Was that when he was on with
Paul Rudd was the host. And
then Dave Grohl thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's Paul McCartney. So
right.
Normally on SNL, you just get two songs.
Right.
When he did like four, because he's Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And you let Paul McCartney do
whatever
he
wants.
Yeah. And he owned the show. It was incredible. And that was back when he was only with that band for a few years. This was like, I mean, I think he was only with the band for maybe 5-6 years at that point. And they were incredible.
He did a couple tracks, too, from his new album, Egypt Station, and what amazes me is how well they fit into the set, because, I mean, here's a guy with the unenviable task, right, of trying to tell a crowd of 20,000 that I'm going to play you a couple new songs
now.
You know how that goes over, but I think he does a really, really nice job of presenting that music without ever wholly, entirely dipping into nostalgia, which he could easily do. And still figuring out kind of a way to continue to push it forward and make it sound fresh. It doesn't sound like these are pop songs written like, you know, 45 or 50 years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, he's incredible live, and just still, man, still just touring.
He's still, I mean, he's such a great performer up there too. I mean, it's, I don't think anybody really holds a crowd quite the way he does. I mean, whether it's, you know, a solo acoustic number he did, he's done this on the last several tours, but it's still powerful. He does something solo on a ukulele that George Harrison gave him, and then does it as a tribute to him.
Oh man!
And I mean, to do that in front of, you know, 13,000, yeah, 20,000 people in a stadium is a bold choice, but he always nails it.
Yeah. And also, you know, you can't not love Live and Let Die, because that's just like
the pyro. Yeah,
it's
everything.
Ridiculous.
It's
man.
Insane. It's the same way. It's still quite the production.
Yeah. No, it's one of my favorite moments of any McCartney concert is Live and Let Die.
No, I've seen him a bunch of times now, going back to the first time I saw him was at Wrigley. So I think 2011, 2012, whatever that was. And so to see him 7 years later, and it's like, God, he's really not lost a step. That's just stunning to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen him. The last time I saw him was at Soldier Field.
Wow, okay.
And I want to say it was for Flowers in the Dirt. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
Like 90.
And it was great, I'm assuming.
Amazing. 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 And I happen to be, I know, you know, a lot of people poo-poo Wings. I happen to love
them. I was going to say, I'm not one of them, no.
No, I love that band. I love that band. So, all right, cool. Paul McCartney rules. That's all we're saying.
Yep.
All right. Hang on, Jim. Jim's going to hang out with us some more. We got more to talk about. We're going to play a little game of Music IQ as well. But we got a break here for the news, which is coming up right after this.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they turn around.
Wildcard Wednesday has begun. Jim, you're familiar with Wildcard Wednesday?
Yeah.
All right. Wildcard Wednesday is any artist, any song, anything. It's the requests of the listeners. Who the hell requested that?
That was our good pal Squat.
Squat wanted to hear Welcome Back, Cotter.
He wanted to welcome you back.
I was going to say.
Oh, to welcome me back.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Squat. Thank you.
You jerk.
How rude of me. Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Squat. That was very kind of you.
Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yes. John Sebastian, everybody. That song was a smash hit, too.
Gabe Kaplan, man.
Gabe Kaplan, the one and only. Fantastic mustache. Did you ever see the movie Fast Break?
Yeah.
Basketball coach Gabe Kaplan. He was bearded in that movie.
Well.
Not just the stash, full-on beard.
That's a throwback.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Thank you, Squad. I appreciate that. Welcome back, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man. 312-981-7200 for your requests. Jim Ryan is with us. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Oh, of course. Of course. So we got some other stuff to talk about here. The Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. Can we talk a little bit about
Absolutely,
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy?
Can.
Yeah, let's.
They were over at City Winery. 11 people, I think. 11 people now. You know, speaking of swingers, who would have known we'd get to a swingers reference and a Big Bad Voodoo Daddy reference shortly thereafter?
Is it 1996
Seriously?
Again?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But so they're still a thing, and they played at City Winery, and they were good.
Yeah.
As you would, yeah, you know, they did their couple hits. They did You, Me, and the Bottle Makes Three, Go Daddy, Go Daddy-O. They did that. They did, and they covered a lot of, oh my God, I can't, blinking on his name, Minnie the Moocher.
Cab Calloway.
Cab Calloway. Thank you. Oh my God. Yes, they covered a lot of Cab Calloway, because apparently their last studio album was an album entirely of Cab Calloway songs.
Oh, is that right?
So they did several of them at City Winery. So yeah, so there was that.
So 11 people on stage at City Winery.
Mm-hmm. Which is not easy to do.
No, it's not easy to do.
With a full piano up there as well. Not a keyboard. They didn't cut any corners.
Wow.
Or a three-piece horn section, upright bass, drummer, piano, guitar player. So maybe it wasn't 11. Maybe it was only like 9.
Well, still, that's a lot. That's a lot of
people. Especially with the full-size piano, yeah.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
I mean, City Winery, it's not the biggest stage in the world.
And it can't be easy to transport. I can't imagine these guys are traveling. It's, you know... immense posh luxury, right?
No.
So it can't be easy to be, you know, touring a piano.
Yeah.
You know, synthesizer or keyboard a lot easier.
Yeah, would be.
But it was good. It was fun.
So, did they have anything new?
Well, so I don't think they have too much new. I think that Cab Calloway album is the last thing they've done. But this was what was amazing. Have you ever seen them before?
No.
But as you might expect, there was a lot of people dressed period appropriate who wanted to do, you know, swing dancing and whatnot, right? And there's really not any room to do that at City Winery unless they clear out the floor, which they don't do very often. So people were doing that in, you've been there?
Oh, yeah.
So people were doing that in the hallway between the doors where you come in and the seated area, which is where all of your waitresses and waiters come by to and from with glasses of wine.
Oh,
and man. I was standing there. That's where I was watching the show from. I had a standing ticket over there. And watching, I never saw one waiter or waitress drop a glass of wine or a tray or anything. It was amazing watching them dart to and fro from, you know, dipped women in poodle skirts. It was kind of amazing.
Wow.
It was good people watching, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like the City Winery.
I do, too.
Last time I was there was for Steve Earle.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a great place to see him.
Absolutely. So he loves that place, too.
Yeah, he comes every year now, right?
Yeah.
Does four shows usually?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. The big, for those of you
still
who
around.
Are wondering who where Big Bad Voodoo Daddy was.
City Winery.
City Winery, yeah. I've never seen, I don't think I've ever, I've not seen, I was going to say, I that whole swing thing.
Okay.
In the 90s.
That was a thing there briefly.
Yeah. I saw Setzer. I saw the Brian Setzer Orchestra, which was great.
I finally saw Setzer last fall in Louisville at a festival called Bourbon and Beyond. And it was Brian Setzer. I don't think it was the orchestra. But it was just billed as Brian Setzer. And it was still good. Like, he did the Stray Cat stuff and he did everything you'd want to hear.
Yeah. I saw him with Stray Cats, too, back in the 80s in their heyday.
How old's Brian Setzer now?
Well, he's got to be 60, right?
I'm thinking he's beyond that.
Yeah?
Because weren't the Stray Cats around? Didn't they kind of predate a lot of the other
The Stray Cats' early 80s, I believe, is when they made their... The Stray Cats made their sort of like debut. I think I want to say early 1980, 1981.
Okay.
Around that time.
He's exactly 60 years old.
That's it. Okay. Well, then never mind.
He's
there
60.
You go.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, the Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
I was going to say Cherry Poppin' Daddies. Who are some of the other ones? No, Squirrel Nut Zippers were kind of
Squirrel Nut Zippers
lumped into that.
Yeah. I remember, I'll tell you something, man. That was mid 90s.
Yes.
I was hanging out a lot at Simon's. I was living in Andersonville at that time.
Sure.
I was hanging out a lot at Simon's.
I live right down the street from it now.
And the jukebox was loaded with that stuff. Loaded. That's all you heard.
And that was a fun 5 minutes, though.
It was fun. It was fun. And then everybody, you know, talking about swingers again.
Yeah.
And then everybody was making cocktails and, you know, drinking martinis and stuff. And
this is what amazes me about the 90s, though. You can have the swing music revival right as, like, you know... you have all the angsty Seattle stuff, right? As you have like Lilith Fair, right? As you have like, you know, Van Halen at Ozzy, like putting out like killer albums in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's kind
it was a fun. It was a fun.
Yeah. And there was a lot of different stuff there.
There's a lot of different stuff there.
Variety.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go. here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, man. How you doing, Nick?
All right. What's up?
Good, man. Yeah. I heard you guys talking about Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. And I have not been to City Winery to see anything, but I've heard it's a very small stage, and I'm pretty impressed that they were able to get a full size piano on that stage with you know the the complement of horns that Big Bad Voodoo Daddy brings, man. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's a small space. City Winery is a small space, but you know, they got everything in there.
They did. It was good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I would love to see swing music. It's not even necessarily swing, but you know, I would love to see a band make a comeback or even a new band come in and play something where you've got to have 8 or 9 musicians on stage and it's not Dave Matthews Band on tour.
Ah, all right. Thanks, Chris.
You know, those guys can do anything. They've got all kinds of money and stuff, but seen a bunch of musicians come up on stage and do something together and really explore that whole variety that's possible with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more interesting to me than watching a band where you've got a couple of guitar players, a bass, and a drummer, and then one guy that's got 8 keyboards and a bunch of programmable stuff, and doing something that's everybody plays behind a DJ.
Right. All right, Chris. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. We got a pro Dave.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a. I think what
thank you
see,
Chris.
I think what you see less of that. I mean, it's got to be so hard these days to make any money if you're touring with, 9, 10, 11 people.
Yeah.
To tour all that. Well, I'm looking at a picture of it now. There's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Might have been 7 people, but there's a full piano on that stage.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. If you tour around like constant, because Dave tours constantly.
Right.
It's just like every summer.
Right.
From like April to like September. They're on the road.
They are.
And
are you going to any of the shows? Are you gonna?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be because normally every summer it's 4th of July weekend.
It's the 5th and 6th at Alpine.
Yeah,
I'm going the 6th at Alpine.
6th, my birthday.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll get out there and try. But every year in the summer, you can always, when Dave tours in Chicago or right. in the Chicago area. It's always right around the 4th of July.
They've got that luxury, too, of being able to tour a large band, but play places that, fill 30,000 people as opposed to 300.
Yeah. No, so
financially slightly
I'll tell
more
you, I'll tell you the place that we've talked about negatively in the past is that is Northerly Island.
Ah, yeah.
And I saw Dave there twice.
Yeah, so have I.
Ugh.
I think I'm going there next week, actually, to see the National.
Oh, really?
So better...
I just can't stand that venue.
I think my favorite thing was last year. It was for Dave Matthews, actually. I was working at LaSalle and Randolph and walked out the door, whatever, I think it was, did they start at 7:30? Maybe, does that sound right?
Yeah.
I walked out the door. My last traffic report was at 6 o'clock, and I slid into my seat at about 7:40, right as Dave was coming on. It took me an hour and 40 minutes to get from LaSalle and Randolph to Soldier Field, or I'm sorry, to Northerly Island, through traffic on public transit, through the security checkpoint, and then through the crazy crowds to get to my seat. About an hour 40.
Yeah.
We joked that we could have driven to Tinley Park on a Friday in rush hour
seriously, it's a nightmare sometimes getting into that place. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. I mean, I've been there 3 times, and miserable experience every single time.
Yeah. Do you know what's going to be amazing this weekend? You've got the Rolling Stones at Soldier Field on Friday.
Oh, that's right.
And Country Lake Shake at Northerly Island Friday, Saturday, Sundays.
Oh, my.
So how do you think Friday traffic is going to be with
that's
Lake Shake at Northerly and the Stones at Soldier Field? You've been warned now. Leave 6 hours in advance.
Man, that's going to be a nightmare.
Are the Cubs home that day, Friday?
Yes, they are.
So there you go. So there's that, too.
They're going to 10-game homestand right now. They just
yeah. started. That's right.
So they're going to be...
That is going to be absolutely brutal. Absolutely awful.
Man, oh, man.
Yep. Leave 6 hours early.
Yeah, that's still expect to be late. All right. Jim, hang on.
Sure.
We're going to take a break, and we got more stuff to talk about with Jim, music-wise, and then we're going to play a little Music IQ after 2:30. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us with comments or questions. 312-981-7200. Nobody but a phony. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? I'm alright. Don't nobody but about me. You got to give me a fight. Why don't you just let me be? Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Jim Ryan is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
And Tom, who's the Caddyshack fan?
That was Steve.
Steve with a little Kenny Loggins.
That's the type of guy you'd see at Ravinia.
Yeah. Kenny Loggins?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. I interviewed Kenny Loggins once.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you talk about soundtracks?
Yes, of course we did.
Well, that's amazing.
Because
he's the king of the 80s soundtrack.
There's no question about it. You know, between Caddyshack and
Over the Top.
Over the Top, Over the Top, Top Gun. Yeah.
Caddyshack 2.
Oh, God.
He's on Caddyshack 2, isn't he? What's the one on Caddyshack 2? Because it's way cheesy. It's much cheesier than that.
I don't remember. There's not much about Caddyshack 2 I remember.
Nobody's Fool, maybe?
Is that what it is?
I can hear it, but I don't know the name of it.
I just remember the movie was awful. That's the only thing
Jackie
that I remember.
Jackie Mason?
Jackie Mason. Dan Aykroyd was embarrassing.
He's really bad in that.
It's terrible.
It was Nobody's Fool.
Yeah, Nobody's Fool from Caddyshack 2.
I didn't even have to Google that.
No. That's terrifying right there. Now, how much do you know about Messina?
I actually, no, not a lot. Not a lot about Jim Messina, but I own Caddyshack 2 on DVD.
Why?
Did
you lose a bet?
No, I think it was one of those ones in like 1996 when it was like, you know, $4.99 at
Best Buy.
Yeah, not even there. It was
Walgreens.
Probably more like a super Kmart run at about 2 in the morning. I think that's how you wind up with Caddyshack 2.
I have not seen Caddyshack 2 since it came out.
You want to borrow it?
No.
Okay.
I'd rather not. I'm good. I think I'm fine with it. I just remember I hated it. Yeah. I mean, because Caddyshack is such a classic.
Yeah, it is.
And there was no need for the sequel. I can't even remember. Harold Ramis didn't have anything to do with it, did he?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
And then Happy Gilmore kind of rips part of it off. That part at the end of Caddyshack 2 where it turns into like a mini golf course. To me, Happy Gilmore totally rips that part off.
Oh, okay. Wow, Happy Gilmore ripping off Caddyshack 2.
I will say, Harold Ramis does have a screenplay credit.
He does.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Who directed that thing?
Alan Arkush.
Oh, Alan Arkush. Caddyshack 2. I can't believe you own Caddyshack 2.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hey, another story that we wanted to talk about was the Face the Music Foundation benefit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that.
I talked to Butch Vig for that.
Cool.
He's just wonderful. I mean, everyone in Garbage is exactly as nice as you would ever want rock stars to be, but figure they're probably not. Every one of them. I've interviewed Butch. I've met Shirley a couple times. I've interviewed Steve Marker, and every time they're just wonderful human beings. But so they were doing this benefit at the Riv for Face the Music Foundation, which they kind of raise money to create scholarships to put people into treatment who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it.
Oh,
and they work with Recovery Unplugged, which is a group who works to incorporate music into the recovery process.
Wow.
So it's very music driven. And so Garbage was the headlining act at the Riv with that. So I interviewed Butch and we talked just about the power of music, really. I don't think we talked hardly at all about Garbage. We just talked about, you know, the power of music in the strange world that we live in. You know, it can be used to make, artists can make you think. You know, it can be escapism from, you know, the stuff we deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And just the way that kind of transfers over to the way that Recovery Unplugged incorporates all of it into the recovery process. So it was really cool.
It's interesting that, you know, how they would incorporate music into recovery. That sounds really great.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's certainly unique. I've never heard of it before this, but I had talked to a couple of musicians who work locally as part of it. Jam Arkel, they were the opening act. And, you know, he told me a story. He was, you know, addicted. He was living on the West Side and got help and has come back to kind of work with that foundation. And, you know, I talked to a couple of musicians who basically said they kind of, you know, having something to dedicate themselves to during that recovery process was really huge. And music was that thing. So
that sounds
so great. Yeah, it was wonderful.
That sounds really, really great. And can people can check out the Face the Music Foundation, right? I'm assuming it's
they've got a website, and I linked to it in my Forbes review. Same with Recovery Unplugged, both of those. If you go to Forbes.com and you search Jim Ryan or you search Butch Vig or you search Face the Music Foundation, you'll find the article and everything's linked to in there.
Yeah, cool.
It was great, yeah.
How many times have you seen Garbage?
You know what? That's what's so funny. That's why I was so excited about it. That's only the second time third time I've seen Garbage. The last time I saw them was 2001. They were opening for U2 at United Center on the Elevation Tour.
Right.
So I hadn't seen him since then. I don't even know if this counts. I saw them do, I think, like two songs during an autograph signing at the Virgin Megastore.
Oh, the old Virgin Megastore. Yeah.
So no, I hadn't seen him in quite a while, and they were fantastic. Shirley Manson is, to me, in the pantheon of amazing front women. She is just a phenomenal front person.
Yeah, I love her.
She controls the stage. She's got swagger. She's hysterical.
Yeah.
She's just
yeah
a dynamite.
Our old buddy, our old buddy Esmeralda Leon.
Oh, she commented on my
obsessed with garbage.
When I checked it on Facebook, I think she was the first person to comment. Actually.
Oh yeah. No. She's a massive fan of garbage, and Shirley Manson in particular. Yeah, it was always like, I don't know, I think the topic used to come up nightly.
Who was her favorite? Was it Shirley? Or?
Oh, Shirley, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Without question. I mean, it's like one of her heroes.
No, they're all really fantastic people. That's, yeah.
I was at that U2 show.
Okay.
That's one of them.
That's one of my all-time favorite shows.
The Elevation Tour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the first time I had seen U2, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, I saw them. Unforgettable Fire.
Okay.
In 84.
I wanted to go to Zoo TV when it was in Tinley Park.
Classic.
And my parents wouldn't let me go.
Why?
I was too young. I know.
That makes me feel old.
I know. I didn't even want to say that, actually. Yeah. And then I was going to go buy tickets for Pop Mart at Soldier Field, and my car wouldn't start in the driveway.
No.
And then I ran back inside to do the phone thing, and that was just a fail. Yeah. So
that's too bad.
Yeah, I didn't see him till Elevation.
I saw him for Unforgettable Fire at the UIC at Pavilion.
I have a bootleg of that, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
Great tour.
Uh-huh.
Saw him the Zoo TV tour.
Where did you see him at on Zoo TV? Was it
Poplar?
Okay. Wow, really? That's amazing.
Poplar? It was outdoors. Well, of course it was outdoors.
Who was the opener? Because they had incredible openers on that tour. Was it the Pixies?
No.
Public Enemy?
Public Enemy.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was P.E.
Wait, Public Enemy opened for U2?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. On the Zoo TV tour.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and even mentioning Pixies, like, I can't imagine a world where Pixies are opening up for U2.
Yeah. That world existed.
Well, and then we've talked too about that show at the Aragon where it was Public Enemy opening for the Pixies.
Sonic Youth.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
because that came up. You and I talked about it once before because it was Steve Marker from Garbage who told me the story about driving down from Madison and being at that show and then walking out of the Aragon as there was a riot going.
There was
on
a riot Lawrence. About. There was a riot about the first Gulf War.
Right.
There were protesters. This was in 91.
It's crazy.
But yeah, that show was amazing. Sonic Youth and P.E. Come on,
that's and then Steve telling me that Flavor Flav was just inciting everything by hanging out of the balcony, hanging out the window, screaming down at everybody.
Idiot. All right, he is a hype man though, so that's his job. All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay,
let's take a quick break for the news, and then when we come back, we got more stuff to talk about, and then we're going to play a little round of Music IQ right here on WGN. This is just really weird because I used this song in a play that I directed too. What's going on?
The universe is talking to you, man.
It's crazy. Crazy. I love that song, man. Who requested it?
That was listener Tom.
All right, Tom. Get good taste, man. Jim Ryan is here. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, good.
I'm wonderful.
So we've been talking about some of the stuff that you've been writing about, and where can everybody, you can go to Forbes, and where else are you contributing to?
Forbes.com, and if you search me, you'll find it. Then the Daily Herald a bit. I've got a piece coming up. It'll probably run mid-July, Lollapalooza preview, an interview with Chevelle, who hails from Grays Lake, just up the road. So That's coming for the Daily Herald in July. And then I still do some stuff for Chicago Now as well, the Tribs blog site.
There you go. You can check all that out. And he joins. You join us like once a month,
yeah,
usually, and talking about movies. We're talking about music and, well, sometimes movies.
Yes.
And we are going to play a little round of Music IQ coming up here. Who's the big headliners for Lollapalooza this year?
Lollapalooza this year is Childish Gambino, The Strokes, Ariana Grande.
Uh-huh.
Those are, the, I think, the three big ones. I'm excited about Janelle Monáe.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about Slash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slash is going to be awesome.
Just Slash?
Slash with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
That's who kind of backs him on his solo tours. They did, before Slash got back with Guns N' Roses, they did a lot of Guns N' Roses stuff live, and now that he's back in the band, they do like one song. I think they do Night Train.
That's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's fine.
Childish Gambino's all right in my book, man.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah.
So that's Lollapalooza, and that's coming up first weekend in August.
All right. There you go. It's always the same weekend as my Flashback Horror Convention. It's the Flashback Horror Convention that I'm a co-host of.
Yes,
it's always the first weekend in August.
I had a question for you, actually. By the way, since you bring this up, did you go see Glenn Danzig at the Music Box?
I did not. I did not. I heard it was a disaster.
I heard really bad things about it.
An absolute disaster.
Which again, who could have possibly expected that?
Yeah, I have a friend who is a maniac Danzig fan.
Okay.
Like a maniac. And he maintained that it was the most entertaining thing he'd ever seen in his entire life.
Intentionally or unintentionally?
I think it's unintentionally.
Okay.
But this guy, my friend Ryan, he is the biggest Danzig fan. It's ridiculous.
I love Glenn Danzig for the unintentional comedy that he brings into my life.
I can't, you know, when I heard about it that he was like he directed this movie and
violent erotica.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what to make of it, but the people that were there it was memorable.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a special human being.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's still around.
Yeah, good old Glenn Danzig. And that Cinepocalypse Fest was I think it's still going.
Is it?
Because Tom went last night.
Okay.
He went to the Music Box last night as part of the Cinepocalypse Festival and saw Joe Bob Briggs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard him saying that right as I walked in.
We had him on the show last week.
That's outstanding.
And I love that guy. And he did like a 2.5 hour presentation on why rednecks saved Hollywood.
Where was that at?
Music Box.
That was at the Music Box.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, as part of the Cinepocalypse Fest.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Danzig has an album of Elvis covers coming out, by the way. Did you know that? He's breaking up the Misfits again, and he's putting out a Elvis covers album.
I don't even know what to say. I don't know what to say. Glenn Danzig has an album of Elvis covers.
Coming out this fall.
Well, he does sound a little bit like Elvis.
I'd like to interview him about that.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Or just generally.
Yeah, have you ever interviewed him?
I never have, but I was reading an interview this week with him where the interviewer pointed out that he came into the studio with a flip phone. Which is just, again, this guy is unintentionally hilarious. Everything about him is unintentionally hilarious.
He came in with a flip phone.
Uh-huh, and then went on to defend how he doesn't want a smartphone because it can be tracked. And the host tried to explain to him that all cell phones can be tracked, that the flip phone doesn't help him there. And he didn't care. He was team cell phone, team flip phone.
Team flip phone.
Yeah, okay. Danzig. Anywho.
Danzig. All right. Well, so we play this game every time you're on.
Yes.
Jim, it's called Music IQ.
I haven't won it in a while.
And the three of us will battle it out. We'll ask a total of 10 questions.
Yes.
And whoever has the most correct at the end wins a Buick.
Perfect.
So we've got Tom, we got me, and we've got Jim. So
Tom won last time on his first time ever playing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Tom, you won.
He reminded. He wasted no time reminding me of that.
Oh,
today,
is that right?
When I walked in, yeah.
Drove here in the Buick.
Yeah.
So wait. Is it the same Buick then?
It's the same Buick.
We traded it off.
It's just handed down.
So I got next time when I come in, I got to drive the Buick back.
Same Buick,
assuming I win.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So that's how it works. And let's see. I ask Jim.
Yeah.
right? And then Jim, you ask
Tom.
Tom asks me.
That's right.
The questions. That's how it works.
That's it.
Okay. So let's start it out, shall we?
Yes.
All right. So this is for you.
All right.
This is ridiculous.
Public Enemy?
No. Listen to this question if you can handle it. Which movie features John Travolta grooving to a disco beat? Is it Saturday Night Fever, Flashdance, or Grease?
I was going to say, I really wanted to hear what the selections were. I'll go with Saturday Night Fever.
You think?
A. Final answer.
There you go. You got it.
All right.
It's starting it off. Bored. Starting off with some difficult stuff.
I got a brain buster here for Tom too.
All right.
Tom, which American festival has no stage, no food, and no toilets? It attracts over 50,000 people each year. Is it Coachella? Is it Extravaganza? Or is it Burning Man?
Oh, it's Burning Man.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
Burning.
No toilets. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that really makes me want to.
It's even more exciting than I thought it was.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, we got that one right. Burning Man.
No toilets, apparently.
All right.
Or food.
No food, nothing. Just stand outside.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Lots of drugs. And all right.
All right, Nick. What is Talking Heads' David Byrne's vehicle of choice? Is it bicycles, motorbikes, or skateboards?
What?
I'm just reading the card. What is David Byrne's vehicle of choice?
Is he really?
Yeah.
Bicycles.
It is
bicycles. It is.
The last time they were in town, I think he made a big show out of riding his bicycle from Oak Park to the Riviera, I believe. He did.
I did not know this about David Byrne.
Does he wear the big suit?
Yeah.
Well,
that'd be amazing.
All right. Well, we're all tied now.
Yeah.
One apiece. All right. All right. Jimmy, ready?
Yes.
Again, the font is very small on these cards. I just want to remind people that I have old eyes. Which song started as the background music for a Levi's commercial before shooting to the chop of the hit parade?
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Is it Spaceman by British band Babylon Zoo? Is it Wannabe by the Spice Girls? Or is it Daydreamer by Adele?
I have absolutely no idea. I'm going to go with the Spice Girls?
No.
Who is it?
Spaceman by British band Babylon Zoo.
Good to know.
Going
to have to brush up on them.
Yeah. Okay. I still don't know what
that is. Well,
there we go. All right.
All right, Tom. At what age did Esperanza Spalding join the Chamber Music Society of Oregon? Was she 5, 10, or 14?
I do listen to Esperanza Spalding. I'm going to say 10.
Sorry, that's incorrect. She was 5.
Whoa!
She taught herself to play the violin in 1 year at 5 years old.
Wow. I was picking my nose at 5. That's what I was doing. All right.
Okay, Nick. In 1964, Marianne Faithfull had an encounter that would change her life. Who did she meet? Was it Bob Dylan's drummer, David Bowie's sound engineer, or the manager of the Rolling Stones?
My guess would be the manager of the Rolling Stones.
That is correct.
I mean,
and it was all downhill from there.
All right. Why don't we take a break here real quick? Okay, and we'll come back. So far, I'm in the lead. That doesn't happen very often. I've got 2, and Jim and Tom both have 1 on the Music IQ front. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, more Music IQ and all kinds of other fun stuff right here on WGN. Every time I hear this song, I think of Adaptation. Every single time.
Sure.
That song is so associated with that movie for me. I love that movie. I adore that film.
I haven't seen that in forever.
It's so good.
Is that Spike Jones?
Yeah. It's so good. So, hey, by the way, coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio in the middle of a game of Music IQ. Jim Ryan is with us, and Tom is here, and we're playing. I'm in the lead with two, and Jim and Tom are both tied with one. Okay, are we ready?
Ready.
Pick it up. Yep. All right, let's see if you can get this one. Who is the lead singer of the Rolling Stones? I'm not making this up. This is really the question.
Well,
is it Slash, Paul McCartney, or Mick Jagger?
Let's go with C, Mick Jagger.
That's correct.
Wow.
Oh, wow. All
right.
You learn something new every day. All right, Jim, there you go. You picked one up.
All right. Tom, which artist said, and I quote, "I think someone upstairs saved me from being ordinary" when speaking of his handicap and his musical accomplishments? Was it Michael Petrucciani, Stevie Wonder, or Ray Charles?
Oh, man. I'm gonna say Ray.
It was Michael Petrucciani.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Who is Michael Petrucciani?
Does anyone actually know? Do you know?
No. Nick?
Charles Lloyd decided to get back on stage after a long break to play with Michael Petrucciani. Their concert at the 1982 Montreux Jazz Fest received an award of excellence.
Oh, good.
Was that a jazz question?
I read that factoid off the card, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well.
So there you go.
You learn something new every day.
The
Mick Jagger is the lead singer of the Rolling Stones. All right. Okay. What's next?
All right. Let's see if you can get this. Which band was filmed by Martin Scorsese in Shine a Light? Was it Neil Young and Crazy Horse, the Rolling Stones, or Zeppelin?
That would be the Rolling Stones.
That is correct.
Yes.
I do have to say on this card, it doesn't say Led Zeppelin. It just says Zeppelin.
It just says Zeppelin?
Yeah, it says, and they also got, it says Neil Young and the Crazy Horse.
Wow.
Wow.
All right.
And the Crazy Horse. All right.
It's a lot of Rolling Stones talk tonight.
Yeah, yeah. It really is.
It's like someone knew they were coming here Friday.
Mm-hmm. Who was behind the 2001 hit song "Get This Party Started"? Is that Gwen Stefani, Jennifer Lopez, or Pink?
It's Pink.
Yes, it is Pink.
That was one of the first CDs I ever bought with my own money.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Misunderstood with a Z.
That's right. Okay. Nice job.
Thank you.
All right.
Tom, why in their contracts did the rock band Van Halen request to have a bowl of M&Ms with no brown ones in their dressing room? Was it because they loved M&Ms other than the brown ones? Was it because a band member was allergic to brown food coloring? Or was it to make sure their contract had been read through?
To make sure their contract had been read through.
That is correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They found, if they found brown M&Ms in their dressing room, they found it as a valid reason to terminate a contract.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I know, and people made such a big deal out of that. Oh, they're so, you know, they're demanding this, but it was really smart business move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Genius.
Yeah. So, all right.
All right, here we go. Nick, Patti Smith entered New York's music scene in the late 1960s. Which artist was she dating at the time? Was it Lou Reed, photographer Robert Mapplethorpe, or writer Jack Kerouac?
Lou Reed?
Incorrect. It was photographer Robert Mapplethorpe.
And for the record, I knew that.
I knew that.
It's working.
Hi, Vic.
All right, carry on.
I can't wait to listen to one of Vic's podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
We'll do it on Friday.
Yeah.
We'll, you know.
I keep seeing it on Facebook. I'm like, I have to listen to that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I get that one wrong. All right. It's three for me, three for Jim. Boy, Tom, one.
I know.
Okay.
Sophomore slump.
All right, you ready?
I am.
Okay. What was most unusual about the sound of Bjork's 2004 album, Medulla?
I'm going to need the multiple choice of this
it
one.
It is sung in Icelandic. It is hummed. It uses almost exclusively human vocals.
All the above? Can I get the first two one more time?
It is sung in Icelandic. It is hummed, or it is uses almost exclusively human vocals.
I'm going with that one.
The last one?
Yeah.
You got it.
Wow. So there's no instruments?
I guess it's just her voice.
It would be just like someone imitating a kazoo. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, that sounds like Bjork, yeah.
Yeah. Good old Bjorky. All right.
Tom, which actress appears in Justin Timberlake's video for What Goes Around Comes Around? Is it Scarlett Johansson, Mila Kunis, or Cameron Diaz?
Is Cameron Diaz?
It is not.
Oh, don't.
ScarJo.
Really?
Scarlett Johansson. Oh. The clip was directed by Samuel Bayer and features dialogues by Nick Cassavetes, won an MTV Music Award in 2007.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right, what's next?
All right, so...
So now we're on the other cards.
On the other cards.
Is that where we are now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, flip them over.
We flipped them over now.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Nick. Thelonious Monk is considered to be a founder of which jazz style? Is it cool bop, hard bop, or bebop?
Bebop.
Correct. Very good.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Let's see if you can get this one, Jim. In which American city was the record label Motown founded in 1959? Would that be Detroit, Chicago, or New York?
Let's go with Detroit.
You think?
I'm positive.
Yes, that's...
I have it on good authority.
That's correct.
All right. Tom, which Eastern European group's signature song lived a second youth thanks to an internet meme? Was it Ozone, Helium, or H2O?
It was Ozone.
It was Ozone.
Because it was the Numa Numa song, I think.
Wow, you knew that?
I'm a child of the internet. That's like proto-memes, man.
I have no idea what any of that means.
That was like the baby shark of what, Tom, 2000?
The baby shark.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, man, it was everywhere.
The band met international success in 2004 with its song Dragosti Dinti, made popular by a number of internet videos, including that of 19-year-old American Gary Brolsma. That didn't help me at all.
I have no idea what any of that is. It all sounds
Tom
vague.
Sounds like words.
Sounds like words.
Do you want to jump in?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, man.
We got time for one more question before we break here for the news.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. Frank Sinatra's My Way is in reality a cover of which song? Is it For Me, Even a Fool Learns to Love, or Come d'Habitude?
What?
I've never heard this.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a cover.
My Way is a cover of which song? For Me, Even a Fool Learns to Love, or Come d'Habitude?
I'm going to say For Me.
Incorrect. It was Come d'Habitude.
I have no idea what any of that.
Apparently, it's the most covered French song in history.
Oh, there you go.
How about that? All right. Well, we've got a break here for the news, and then we come back. Jim, you're in the lead.
Yeah.
You have 5. I have 4. Tom has 2. So we'll continue playing Music IQ right after we break here for the news, which is up next.
Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Phooey, quicker than the human eye. He's got style, a groovy smile, and a vibe that just won't stop. When the joint gets rough, he's super tough with a Hong Kong Phooey chop.
Hong Kong Phooey. Of course, is Scatman Crothers, providing the voice of Hong Kong Phooey. One of my favorite cartoons when I was a kid, Hong Kong Phooey. Any memories you guys have of Hong Kong Phooey?
No.
My dad was super into Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Scatman Crothers, man.
Yeah. It's called The Shining, Danny.
Yeah, that's right. It always drives me nuts that whenever I watch The Shining, it makes me crazy that Scatman Crothers gets on a plane, flies on a plane, travels in a snowplow for like days, walks in the door, hatchet in the chest. Like what? That was the biggest waste of time.
Yeah.
Biggest waste of time. Guy's on 12 planes. He's got to climb up mountains. He's driving in the snow. As soon as he walks in, kaplam, axe in the chest. A waste.
Should have hit him with a karate chop or something, man.
Yeah, man. Who requested the Hong Kong Phooey?
That was Dino.
All right, Dino. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're playing the Music IQ. And so far, Jim is in the lead with 5 correct. I have 4 correct. Tom has 2 correct.
All right.
And now we begin another round.
Yes.
Are you ready, Jim?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm in a good headspace. Let's do this.
Who was at the origin of the hit song "I Put a Spell on You"? Was that Nina Simone, Creedence Clearwater Revival, or Screamin' Jay Hawkins?
Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
That's absolutely correct. Very good.
An outstanding song.
A great song. He was a maniac. Didn't he have like 85 kids?
That sounds right. I think that's correct.
I think he had like an insane amount of children.
I'm not sure.
And like grandchildren and all this. I mean, I think he had like 14 kids or something like that. And then like 27 grandchildren.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Loon.
Screaming Jay Hawkins. Tom, sure you'll have this one handy. What was the maximum capacity of a mini disc between 1992 and 2013? I need this number in minutes. Was it 160, 240, or 320? That's the maximum capacity of a mini disc between 92 and 2013.
Can you give me those options again? It was 160.
160, 240, 320. Those are in minutes.
I'm going to say the second one.
It is 320.
Oh.
Wow. Okay, great. Great. Well, they just, I should have known that because they just leaked that one Radiohead mini disc from the OK Computer Sessions.
Oh, is that what that was? I saw that happened. Yeah. I didn't know it was a mini disc that got leaked.
Yeah, it was like hours and hours.
Mini disc?
18
yeah.
hours.
18 hours.
Of
the OK Computer? From OK Computer?
Uh-huh. Yeah, of the sessions prior to.
Wow.
Somebody released it as a bootleg and then the band got mad and just released it.
Yeah, with all the proceeds going to like a charity.
Didn't that happen to Radiohead already? Didn't somebody leak something beforehand?
Maybe.
Before this, and they were like, well, whatever, we'll just release it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay, what's next?
All right, next up for you, Nick.
Yeah.
On the estate of which celebrity did Canadian singer-pianist Diana Krall marry Elvis Costello in 2003? Was it Elton John's estate, Phil Collins' estate, or Paul McCartney's estate?
Oh. Elvis Costello, right?
Yeah, Diana Krall married Elvis Costello. On whose estate?
I'm going to say Paul McCartney.
That was my guess.
That's incorrect.
Wow.
It was Elton John.
Okay.
Elton John?
Yeah. I guess they're buddies.
Okay.
Well, Elvis and Paul did an album together, so that was where I was going.
That's what I thought, and that's why I thought that. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Which American songstress studied quantum physics before fulfilling her dream to enter the music industry?
Wow.
Would that be Missy Elliott, Alanis Morissette, or Erykah Badu?
Wow. Is it Missy Elliott?
It is not.
Is it Erykah Badu?
It is Erykah Badu.
Okay. I was going to say, I know it's not Alanis. Quantum physics. Had no idea.
Well, first of all, Alanis Morissette is Canadian.
Canadian, yeah.
So that right there.
And she was on...
Nickelodeon, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember her from You Can't Do This on Television, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling, also Canadian, also on that show, right?
Oh, that I don't remember, okay.
Ryan Gosling was a kid star.
Wow.
Yeah,
he was on like Nickelodeon show.
That's crazy.
Britney Spears, another one.
Yeah, she was a Mouseketeer.
She was a Mouseketeer.
Mm-hmm. Along with JT, Justin Timberlake, and Christina Aguilera.
That's right.
There you go.
All right, what's the next question?
All right, Tom, which band sings the theme music for the TV series CSI? Is it Cream, The Birds, or The Who?
The Who.
It is The Who.
Yeah!
Each version of the show has a different theme song by The Who. Very exciting.
Because the original CSI was Who Are You? And then
Miami was the because it was always David Caruso. It was always David Caruso making some smart-ass remark.
Turning and putting on the sunglasses.
Yeah, he put sunglasses on. Well, maybe he won't have a friend for dinner.
Do you remember what CSI New York was?
Yeah, luckily I have that here.
Oh, wow.
That was Joe Mantegna, right?
That was Bob O'Reilly.
Bob O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the Who.
Love okay. that band.
All right.
You got that right, Tom?
I got that correct, yeah.
Okay, thank so goodness. It is now 6 for Jim, 4 for me, 3 for Tom.
Okay.
A couple of questions left. Okay.
Here we go. In the early 1990s, where did American pop stars Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and Christina Aguilera begin their careers?
Wow.
Oh, my God.
How does that happen?
I honestly did not look at this until right now. Was it they starred in the remake of the TV series The Little Rascals, they sang in the choir for the Broadway musical Annie, or in the all-new Mickey Mouse Club?
The all-new Mickey Mouse Club.
Gotta be kidding me.
I would have gotten that one
either way.
But the timing,
what are the odds?
The timing was pretty weird.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. All right. Jim, are you ready?
I am.
Please. What funk band is famous for the song September? Is it Kool and the Gang, the Commodores, or Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Of course, it's one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yes, it is. Philip Bailey's coming to City Winery, by the way.
Is he?
Yes.
You know, he can hit notes only dogs can hear.
Is that actually true?
No, but he can. But he's got a very high voice.
Well, that explains why all those Rottweilers show up outside City yeah. Winery whenever he comes.
Philip Bailey. You remember, She's an Easy Lover?
Oh, yeah. So good.
I love that song.
Amazing video.
Yeah. I think it's
one of the only 5 good Phil Collins songs, really.
I love that song.
I do, too.
It's super good.
Yeah, it's a great song. Okay, what's next?
Tom, who is the longtime musical collaborator of lyricist Bernie Taupin?
Come on.
Is it Billy Joel, Elton John, or David Bowie?
It's Elton John.
It is, in fact, Elton John.
Have you seen Rocket Man?
I have not. Is it good?
It's really good.
It is actually good. Okay. Do they take a lot of liberties with it? Like,
well, it's a fantasy. This is a musical.
Okay.
And you know, so the liberties that they take here, the style is established.
Okay.
Whereas like Bohemian Rhapsody took liberties and lied throughout the entire movie. This is a fantasy. Like at one point he's floating, the whole audience is floating, and that really didn't happen. But it's a stylized musical. And I really, I thought it was great.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. What really messed me up was the fact that John Reed is in both Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man, both played by Game of Thrones actors.
Yep.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. All right.
All right, here we go. Oh, wait, whose turn is it?
It's,
I just gave you the Bernie Taupin question.
All right, you got a question for me.
All right, which American artist was nicknamed the First Lady of Song? Was it Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, or Ella Fitzgerald?
I'm going to say Ella Fitzgerald.
Very good. That is correct.
Nice.
All right. It is 7 for Jim, 6 for me, 4 for Tom.
Oh, man.
One question left.
I was going to say, here we go.
Here it is. What are the 2 most popular songs of Kool and the Gang on Spotify? 2 most popular songs of Kool and the Gang on Spotify. Would it be Celebration and Jungle Boogie?
Cherish and Joanna.
Would it be Get Down on It in Ladies Night or Joanna and Victory?
What was the first one again?
Celebration and Jungle Boogie.
Yeah.
That's what you're going with?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah. You're the winner because we can't catch up.
Mathematical elimination.
Yeah.
Sealed the deal.
Kool and the Gang, man.
Do you want the Rod Stewart question anyway, Tom?
Yeah. Love Rod Stewart.
Wow. Rod Stewart, talking about a job he had before music, said it cured him of his fear of death. What was it? Was he a police investigator, an emergency room nurse, or a grave digger?
He was... Oh, God, I should know this. An emergency room nurse.
I'm sorry, he was a grave digger.
Grave digger?
Yeah.
Great song by Dave.
Great monster truck.
All right, Tom.
All right. Fiona Apple's album, When the Pawn, .. held the record for what?
Longest title.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yep.
There it is.
Fiona Apple. What's going on with the Fiona Apple?
Seriously.
Mentioned this morning.
Some themes today.
Fiona, Public Enemy, The Stones.
Let's see. Jim with 8. Me with 7. Tom with 4. And that's the final. Jim, right. you're the winner.
You win the Buick.
You get the Buick. The Buick is yours for
3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Make sure you find a nice parking spot for
bring it back with a full tank.
And remind everybody again what articles are going to be going up again.
I've got a piece coming out tomorrow on a new festival that's going to be taking place in Las Vegas in October called Metarama. It combines the worlds of music, gaming, and esports.
What?
Talk to Charlie Walker, one of the three Charlies of C3 Presents. That will be running tomorrow after they announce the lineup at 9 a.m. So it'll be at Forbes tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And then Chevelle Lollapalooza preview coming up for the Daily Herald in July. And I've got Hall & Oates, too, by the way.
You got Hall & Oates?
Had Daryl on the phone and still waiting to get John.
Oh!
And that'll be running before September.
Very
cool.
While
on that one, but very exciting.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, man, thanks for coming down.
Thanks, Dick.
It was always a lot of fun. And Jim Ryan, who also is your winner this morning for Music IQ, and he'll be back again in about a month or so. All right, we're going to take a quick break right here on 720 WGN.